Okay. Thank you again, Ravelli, for inviting me to give it. I think this is the fifth year, and I always enjoy going through the Haggadah right after Purim, or maybe sometimes Ravelli can attest.
Before Purim, every year.
Got to find new stuff to say.
Well, this is great.
Yeah, you know, I just we'll see. Some of these, there's multiple ideas in these numbers, so kind of it's really more than 10, but we'll see what we can get through. Okay, so I try to look through my old sheets to make sure I'm not repeating anything. If I do, you know, call me out on it.
Yeah, we'll remember.
Okay, fine. So the first idea here, and I'll try and speak quickly so we can cover more ground, is a story I saw about Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner, one time at his Seder, you know, there's an idea that the Baal Seder, sometimes all the males at the Seder wear a kittel. So there are different ideas why the kittel, that we're not going to get into now. But Rav Huttner was sitting there, and one of the guests knocked over, you know, a cup of wine all over his white kittel. And now it's now no longer pure white. And so the guest is all embarrassed. And Rav Huttner says, don't worry about it. You know, the kittel with stains on it, you know, a kittel without stains is like a Yom Kippur machzer without tears. And I think the point actually, just today, what my colleague, Rabbi Josh Flug, shared with me that it's actually a minhag. Some people have not to wash the kittel or dry clean the kittel from Pesach to Rosh Hashanah. Dafka for this reason. It's a battle scar, you know, which shows that you fulfilled Pesach in its fullest, that either that or maybe like Rav Huttner, that he gave him a chance not to get upset when somebody knocked it over on his white kittel and dirtied it. Okay, that's just a nice little short idea to get us started.
One down. Go.
Okay. Kaddish Orchat. So the order, you know, normally when we have in Judaism rituals, so the order usually is first you do Orchats, first you do the cleansing, right? You go to the mikvah before Yom Kippur, or some people go every Erev Shabbos or every morning. Before davening, we wash our hands. Before Hamotzi, we wash our hands. So why here do we start the Seder Kaddish and then Orchats?
Wait. We do that every Shabbos.
What?
Let him ask.
Okay, right. Go on. Sorry, go on. It's not a roll. It's not a roll.
Your question.
The night of this, okay, so the, hold on, so the night of this, so there's two answers I want to share with you. So the first I saw Rav Asher Weiss's Haggadah, he says that the night of the Pesach, it's an auspicious time, where Hashem's Shechina is here, it's a Leil Shimurim, it's a special night, the night of Geula, and therefore in this night, there's like Kedusha permeating you know, it's in the air, and so therefore you don't even need that cleansing first to get to the Kedusha. The Kedusha, you can just jump right into the Kedusha on the night of Pesach. So you have to ask, what about every night, right?
Every Shabbos.
First you make, you have Kiddush every, okay, right. We'll think about that and we'll come back to that.
He's asking a question for the Yekis.
Very good, okay. The second idea for the Kaddish Orchat, so I saw Rabbi Shlomo Einhorn, who's a rabbi in Los Angeles, Ray Spolter knows well also. He just came out with a book, Judaism Alive, last year. It's a great book. In there, he quotes an idea by the Baba Varebi, who says that on the night of Pesach, we want to set our spiritual frequency and kind of frame the whole night in the night of Kedusha. So that's why it's important, right? However you start off, that's going to frame the whole night. So we want to frame the night with the spiritual frequency of Kedusha, of holiness. And he tells a story in his book when he was in Israel, when he was 14 years old, he went to the Makolet, it was Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time, and he takes a few things and puts it on the counter, and the Baal Chanut, the Makolet owner says, Rotel Asot Cheshbon. So he looks at him like, who are you to tell me to do Cheshbon and Nefesh? and then he realized what the store owner was saying, but his point was that during that time of year, during Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, your mind is in like a spiritual frequency of the Kedusha, of Elul, of the Yomim Noraim. So it's the same thing here. The Baba Rabbi is saying, Kaddish Orchats, we want to start off the night with Kaddish to kind of focus the whole night with Kedusha. Okay, third idea, Halach Ma'anya. Good. So we've discussed this before, different ideas about Halach Ma'anya. How is it inviting guests at this point helpful? Right, you know, we're already into the Seder. If you wanted to invite a guest, you should have done it at Shul. Should have done it at the beginning of the Seder. right? There are other questions that are even stronger than this of how can you halakhically invite somebody, how can you halakhically invite somebody to join the Korban Pesach if if they're not part of the Chabura, they have to be in part of the group when you make the Korban Pesach. So, but this is a little bit of a cute idea. Maybe it doesn't address all those issues, but Rav Levenstein is Haggadah Umatok Haor. He has a number of writings, Umatok Haor on the Parsha and all the different Chagim. So he says, when it comes to during the year, you have guests a few times a year. Maybe in Israel we have guests more often in the seminaries and the yeshivas. And when we have guests, what do? We clean the house to a T. We make it spotless, right? We try to make it as clean as we can. We cook more food than we usually do, 4 or 5 course meal if you have special guests. When it's just you, when it's just the family, what do? You clean. It doesn't have to be perfect. You don't put everything away. You maybe make 1 course, 2 courses. And that's it. And not only that, but like especially during the week, you may be having dinner, and you're starting dinner already. You're already in the middle of dinner, and then a few minutes in, you realize, oh, I forgot to call down one of the kids to dinner. Oh, Naftali, come on down for dinner. Come on. That's the idea. The night of Pesach is the night where we became one family. Everybody, we're all part of one family. We're all Am Yisrael was created. So tonight, on the night of Pesach, we're showing that we're dafka now, not at the beginning, not earlier. We're inviting him to the Seder now to show you're part of the family. Just like I would call the kids a little bit later. Okay. It's a cuter idea. Okay. Avadim Hayinu. So we say in the Haggadah Avadim Hayinu that if Hashem hadn't taken us out, so we would still be slaves to Paro Mitzrayim, right? Yilu lo hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Avosim Mitzrayim, hari anu vanenu uvnei vanenu mishubadim hainu Paro Mitzrayim. We would still be slaves if Hashem hadn't taken us out. So what does this mean? So on a Pashut level, it means that we would still physically be there, right? But many commentators note that can't be because the slavery is not really something that's around anymore. Right? Maybe in South Africa, I don't know. Pretty much around the world, slavery is a thing of the past, right? And people are so PC these days, that you look at somebody the wrong way and they're screaming at you. So that it can't be. Somebody would have freed us if Hashem hadn't freed us. So it can't be that physically we would still be slaves. The Maharal and others say spiritually, if Hashem hadn't taken us out, we would still be slaves. What do you mean? We were at the 49th level of Tuma, right? And if Hashem hadn't taken us out and redeemed us, we would have been so gone. We would have never been able to come out of the immorality and the culture of Egypt. And spiritually, we would have never been able to be redeemed. So Hashem saved us spiritually. A third possibility is psychologically, that kind of like the Stockholm syndrome, right? With famous example is with Patty Hearst, that you kind of take a affinity with your captors. So even if somebody else had taken us out, B'nai Yisrael psychologically were a battered wife syndrome, I think is another way of putting it. That why do they go back? Psychologically, there's some kind of connection to the captor, to the Egyptians. So therefore, even if somebody else would have redeemed them, they still would have been captive to Paro psychologically. The fourth idea, which I want to expand on a little bit more, is I think Rabbi Jonathan Sacks has a new book out. It's called Not in God's Name. Thank you. And so the end of the book, it's a fascinating book. It talks about trying to understand why people do that kind of thing, why people are violent, and especially in the name of religion. It's fascinating. At the end of the book, he has a chapter called Letting Go of Hate. And he asks the question, he says, if you look in the Torah, so there's a lot of commandments of loving people, loving v'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, loving Hashem. There's a mitzvah v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, loving your fellow Jew. There's a mitzvah v'ahavtem es hager, ki gerim ha'isim be'eretz Yisrael, right? Right? V'ahavtem es hager, love the ger. He says, what happened there when it comes to the Egyptians? So the Egyptians, they enslaved us. There was a partial genocide, killing all the male babies. They were mean to us. They wouldn't let us go when Moshe said, let us go worship Hashem. You'd think, I don't have to love them. In fact, I should hate them. Look at what they did to me. I hate the Egyptians. But what does the Torah say? says, don't hate the Egyptians because you were a stranger in their land. So Rabbi Sacks says, why is there a command, a mitzvah in the Torah, not to hate the Egyptians? So Rabbi Sacks says that, and I'm just going to read it here because Rabbi Sacks writes so nicely.
Hey, what's the mitzvah not to hate Egyptians?
It says, do not hate an Egyptian. Do not hate an Egyptian. Lo tisna es mitzri. In Dvarim Chaf Gimel Zion. So Rabbi Sacks says,
Dor Shlishi. It's a third generation.
Okay,
so it seems sort of partial.
So he says it's very counterintuitive, but he says that the reason that Hashem needed to have this mitzvah. He says, because to be free, you have to let go of hate. This is what Moshe was saying, that if the B'nai Israel continued to hate their erstwhile enemies, Moshe would have succeeded taking the Israelites out of Egypt, but he would have failed to take Egypt out of the Israelites. Mentally, they would still be their slaves to the past, prisoners of their memories. They would still be chains not of metal, but of the mind. And chains of the mind are sometimes the worst of all. And he goes on a page or two later, he says, what Moshe taught his people was this. You must live with the past, but not in the past. Those who are held captive by anger against their former persecutors are captive still. Those who let their enemies define who they are have not yet achieved liberty. So I think that this idea is the fourth possibility of, if Hashem hadn't taken us out of Mitzrayim, we would still be, maybe it's another kind of psychologically, but emotionally attached and enslaved to the Egyptians. Why? Because if Hashem hadn't given us the Torah, hadn't taken us out, hadn't given us the Torah, hadn't given this commandment, do not hate the Egyptians, we would have hated them. And if we hated them, like Rabbi Sacks says, we wouldn't really be free, because if you can't let it go, then you're not free.
What about Amalek point?
Okay, that's a good question. I knew somebody was going to ask that. Rabbi Sacks doesn't talk about that. I'm sort of short on time. I think it's different. I think it's different. First of all, it doesn't say hate. Exactly. It doesn't say, even though the way the Rambam terms it is hate, but in the Pashup Shah and the Pesukim, it does not use like that kind of language.
You're allowed to hate people for their actions, but assuming you're hating somebody because of what they did to you. That's you in there.
Okay. It's a good question, Rabbi. I didn't see that Rabbi Sacks addresses it. But we have to move on. Ding. Okay. Just for this next one, and then
you bring it later.
Okay. I'll leave it in your okay. Okay. Where are we up to? Amar Rabbi Lazar, number 5. So what we say Amar Rabbi Lazar. Right, the famous story of Marim Brachos. Harei ani kven shivim shana. I was like 70 years, less 70 years old. That's a whole story in of itself. V'lo zachiti shitem eretz Yisrael balelot. Ad shedrasha ben zomash ne'emar l'man tizkort yom seifcha eretz Yisrael koy mechayecha. Right, and I wasn't able to find the source for this idea to say Kriya Shema even at night until Ben Zoma came along with the pasuk. Yom Seitcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Koy Me'chayecha. So I want to focus on the pasuk for a minute. So, do you see anything strange with this pasuk? Laman Tizkor Yom Seitcha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Koy Me'chayecha. Okay, you can look at the cheat sheet.
Why singular and not plural?
Okay, very good. Shmuel, you're brilliant.
He's on the ball. He's on the ball.
So Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who's one of the founders of Eretz Chemda, so he has a sefer Zeh Yom Asa Hashem, where he has a collection of drushas they gave relating to Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim. So there he asks this question. He says, it's strange, it should be in the plural. Lamanti's court, Yom Seitchem, Meretz Mitzrayim. You should remember when you went out in the plural from Meretz Mitzrayim. Why is it in the singular? Well, no. Well, okay, it could also be in the Montes court. He points out, if you look at all of the zechiros, like the end of davening, the sheish zechiros, all these zechiros in the Torah, it's always leman tizkor. It's always in the singular of this idea. So what is it about these things specifically? Here we're talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim, that it mentions it in the singular. So Rav Shaul Yisraeli says that when you have a cataclysmic cataclysmic event like that, of an experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, where you've just been slaves in Egypt, and now 2.5 million people are going out as one from Mitzrayim. It's a life-changing event that unifies everybody that's experiencing it together. And so therefore, right, just think about it, something that you've gone through together with your family or with a friend or with a group, you know, that's something that bonds you together as one. And so therefore he says that the experience of leaving Egypt forged Bnei Israel into a unified nation in economy and history and in destiny, right? Going ahead and eventually going to get the Torah. And that's why it says it in the singular, and that's why it also says Es Yom Seitzcha, the stress on the Yom, because it was the specifically that day, that experience, that created that unity. And he goes in the essay, he connects it to Yom HaTzma'ut, and whatever, we can't get into that now. But I have scans of all these sources. I'll post it on YU Torah, so if you want to see any of them inside, you can see them there. Okay, number six. We have the Arba Banim. So two ideas with the Arba Banim. So number one, first let me ask you, what would you say is the order from greatest to worst of the four sons? Okay, don't all yell at it once. It's not a trick question, just like Pashim.
Rasha at the end.
Rasha at the end, okay.
Chacham at the first.
Chacham first, okay. What would be 2-3? Who's the second best?
Tom.
And Naomi Deshlishol third. Okay, good. That's good. Okay, so I want to share two ideas with you that perhaps that say that a little bit differently. So the Rabbi Norman Lamb in his Haggadah, the Royal Table, and that's based on a lot of his drushas from throughout the years. So he says about the Tom. So we always, you know, the Haggadahs always translate Tom as the simple son, right? Mm-hmm. And that's probably based on the Yerushalmi, which Rabbi Lamb refers to, which calls the Tom the Tipesh. He's like the, you know, the stupid son, the simple son. So it kind of puts him in a more negative light. So that's why, you're right, I would have said that he's number three in the order. But Rabbi Lamb says you could also read Tam as Tamim, as wholesome, as pure, as Yaakov Ish Tam Yosheva Ohalim. So first of all, it could be that the Tam is even on the same level as the Chacham, if not right, because Yaakov was a pretty big Tam and Chacham. And number two, maybe even higher than the Chacham, right? Maybe even number one. Why? Rabbi Lamb quotes from the Or HaChaim that in Spain during the times of the expulsion, you know, who were the ones that when they said either kiss the cross or die or or go into Galus, often it was the intellectuals, the philosophers, that the Chachamim, if you will, that converted, you know, and weren't able to live by the Judaism of the Yaruk V'Aliyah Avor. It was the simple ones, with the Jews, with the Emuna Pshuta, that gave up their lives instead of kissing the cross or instead of converting. So you see, perhaps the Tam is even greater than the Chacham. So that's number one.
How do the answers that are given to the Tam justify that? I'd have to look again to see what the answer is, but does that correspond to the answer? The answer to the Chacham, you said it was...
Well, they don't try to make the Chacham into the Tam. Instead, they're trying to make the Chacham, they just say...
Well, no, give them out what do you say to Tam again? We tell them the laws, let them go...
The Tam Mahuam Mazos Vamarte Love the Chosek Yad Hotzianu Hashem in Mitzrayim Bim Beis Avadim. Right, so that's probably why Pashut Pshat the Yerushalmi says it's a simple. He's a simple son. He asks a simple question. Mazos, right? It's not a lamdish pilpul that the Chacham asks about the Apikoven, but it's here. And so we give him a Bechosek Yad Hotzianu Hashem in Mitzrayim Bim Beis Avadim. It could be because he has a Muna Pshuta. You tell him the idea of, you know, Hashem took us out. It's the greatest amuna ever that we had amuna. We were in the depths. Hashem took us out. The Chozak, yeah, we just have to add that amuna. But you're right. I mean, most people don't explain it that way. Okay.
In most parts, it's the same thing. Sort of not in the same context, but he also
about
says,
the Tam.
He says sometimes being the Tam is better than being the Chacham. I think he's basically got a different question, which is why in the Pesukim the Tam's answer comes before the Chacham's answer. You know, you have to figure out how that works. Mm-hmm. Rush also comes first, but whatever it is. So he comes up with that idea also that sometimes, let's say if you're an employee, so if you're working at a job and you start questioning every single thing that your employer says, well, what about this and what about this and what about this, but I have this excuse and that, he's going to throw you out of there, right? So sometimes being too much of a Chacham is not good until after you've already been a tam. You have to be the simple, wholesome, pure, and just go straight. Have a way to shoot the verse before you can get to the level of being a chacham.
So right.
It's a nice, this fits very nicely with what Rav was saying.
Was this a in the chachma shtika? Siag lechachma shtika. Meaning, I'm saying, like, the tam is... Right. Okay, fine. And the second idea with the Arba Banim, so the Russia. So here's an idea from Rabbi Mordechai Rogoff, who, Eli, I don't know if you...
He was
the Rosh Hashiva in Skokie. He was in Europe, and then was in Shanghai during World War II, and he was able to escape there. And then he came to Skokie, to the Skokie Yeshiva, where I learned, but he was there many years before that. But anyway, so he has a sefer on Parsha, and he asks a question there in the Torah where we have the question, we have the statement of the Rasha. So the pasuk says, "V'haya ki yomru aleichem b'neichem." Right, it'll be when you come to Eretz Yisrael and your children. So again, this is talking about the Rasha, because this is going to be the Rasha's question in the Torah. Maha avoda hazos lachem. What's this archaic thing that you're doing? Come on, Dad, get real. Get with the times. Where are you doing this? Maha avoda hazos lachem. V'amartem zevach pesach hula asher asher pasach habatev neisro mitzrayim. And then what does it end off in the pasuk? And we don't say this in the Haggadah, but what does the pasuk end off? Vayikoda am vayishtachavu. It says that they were happy. The Jewish people were happy hearing about this. They gave thanks to Hashem. So Rashi says, what were they giving thanks to Hashem for? Upon hearing the news of the upcoming redemption of going into Eretz Yisrael and the news of the children which they would have. So Rabbi Rogoff says it's very strange. We're talking about the Rasha. So you're telling me that the Jewish people were happy about the Besoros Tovos, that they were going to have children that were Rishayim? Why would you be happy that you're going to have a child that's a Rasha? Right? So Rabbi Rogoff says that you have to look at the children. We have the Rasha, and we have the Eino Yodea Lishol, right? At least the Rasha is asking his question. He may be asking it cynically, but at least he's asking his question. At least he has a dialogue with you. He has communication with you. There's always a chance, if you have a communication with somebody, with your children, to be able to bring them back. The Eino Yodea Lishol, he doesn't even ask you questions. He doesn't have that communication with you. And that's why the Eino Yodea Lishol, he says, is even worse than the Rasha. And that's why the Jewish people gave thanks to Hashem. Okay, the child might stray a little bit. It happens sometimes. But at least we'll still have communication with him. We'll still have a relationship with him, and there's still hope for him. And at least I'll point out, the Eino Yodea Lishol, according to Hitzaitei, is number 4, the bottom of the totem pole. But we've said in the past, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I think Rabbi Sachs also, says, but there's the 5th son, and that's the son that doesn't even show up at the Seder. So at least the Eino Yodea Lishol shows up to the Seder. He may sit with his back to you, and sit in the corner or whatever, not really participate, but at least he shows up. Okay, so that's the Arba Banim. How are we doing on time, Ravelli? It's okay? Okay. Okay, Vehisham... What? 5? Okay, 5. Okay. So, Vehishamda. So Vehi. What is Vehishamda? What is the Vehi? What is this thing? Because of this, Vehishamda la'avosin v'lanu, that because of this, Hashem saves us in every generation. What's the this? So we said different things in the past. We said, perhaps it's that has to do with the Achdus, when there's Achdus. Shelo echa bilvad, the goyim stand up against us because we don't have Achdus, and when we have Achdus, then Hashem saves us. But here, what's the Vihi? So Ravelli actually on Purim pointed out to me that the Vihi can relate to, and I saw this in Rosh Shlomo Levenstein's Haggadah as well, can relate to the cup of wine that we're holding up, right? There's several times in the Haggadah and the Seder where we pick up the cup of wine. This is one of them. So we're saying, Vihi Shamda, this, the cup of wine, is what, because of this, Hashem saves us throughout the history. What does that mean? So there are 4 things, because 4 things the Jewish people merited to be saved in Mitzrayim, right? They didn't change their clothing, their language, their names, and they didn't mix amongst the Goyim, amongst the Egyptians. And Rav Shlomo Levenstein quotes from the Maharsham, and who builds on this idea and says that a grapevine is something that cannot be grafted. I don't know botany, I don't know if this is true or not, but that's That's what he says. I've never seen a permutation of a great before. So he says that it's the same thing, that the Jewish people are compared to a great in the Gefen, Vimre Gefen, and in, other times in the Psukim. So the Jewish people, when are they keep we when we keep to ourselves, so then we're able to be successful. Hashem saves us, and that's why there's this comparison to the grape, to the cups of wine. That because of this, of the stam yenam, of not drinking stam yenam, right, of drinking the wine of the non-Jews, that saves us throughout history. And Shlomo Levenstein tells a story in his Haggadah that there was somebody in World War I, a Jew that was fighting in the army, I think in the German army, and he was very successful, and so they wanted to promote him to the assistant chief of staff for the army. And so before he went into the army, he went to the rabbi, the local rabbi in town. He said, "Give me a bracha so I should be successful. I should come back safe." So they went through all the different mitzvahs. Maybe you could daven. No, it's not going to work out. Maybe I could put on tefillin every day. No, it's not going to work out. Finally, they came to stam yenam. He said, "Just don't drink wine from the goyim." He said, "Okay, that I can try and do." So he was very careful with that always. He comes to they're having a big party for him in the chief of staff's office, in the army office. And they say, "You know, we're going to celebrate. We're going to open up a really great bottle of wine." And, you know, obviously not kosher wine that all the non-Jews are handling. And he's like, "Oh no, what am I going to do? I made that promise to the rabbi." He said, "I can't go back on the promise." So he's thinking. He sees a balcony outside. So he says, "Okay, I'll take the cup of wine. I'll go outside. And when nobody's looking, I'll pour it over the sides, and nobody's the wiser." So he goes and he does that. But somebody sees. And somebody tells the chief of staff, and he gets very upset. And he starts screaming at him, and he says, "How can you do this? And forget it, you're fired. I'm going to send you to the front lines of the battle. Get your stuff out of here and leave." So the soldier, the Jew, is very upset. He's upset at the rabbi. He's upset at this halakha of stam yenam. He's upset at the army. And he grabs his stuff and he leaves. Half an hour later, he's on the train. He gets to the first stop outside of town. And he hears that just 5 minutes ago, the enemies came and they bombed this office. Everybody in the building was killed. And so Rav Shlomo Levenstein uses this as an example that because of Vihi Sha'amda, this idea of keeping Stam Yenam, of the wine, has kept us separate throughout the generations and also merited for this Jew to be saved. And so we never know when things happen, why it happens. But we have a emunah that Hashem does things for a certain reason. If we follow the Torah and listen to Hashem's laws, that Hashem will save us. The other shorter idea for Vishamda, so I saw it by the Piazetzner Rebbe, his most famous work probably is the Eish Kodesh, which he wrote in the Warsaw Ghetto and was written posthumously, which they found after he was killed, unfortunately. So he says, what is Vihisha Amda? What is it that gives us Vihisha Amda Lavosin Vlana? What is it that gives us hope? Gives our fathers and us hope throughout the generations? It's the fact that at the end, what do we say at the end of this paragraph? Hakadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam. Hashem saves us from them. But what Hakadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam? The stress on the Miyadam. We're already in their hands. It's Daka Tishim. It's the 11th hour for those that are not Israeli or European, and we're goners. And even still, at the last second, Hashem is able to save us, and we know it, and we've seen it time and again. That's what gives us hope. Even when he's in the Warsaw Ghetto and it looks terrible, and people are being killed by the Nazis left and right, we have hope because of this, because Hashem saves us even at the last second, many times throughout history. Okay, Esther Mako. Another idea I saw in Rav Asher Weiss's Haggadah. He quotes the Rav Yah, who, if you look at the source sheet here, I printed, I showed you this little diagram here. He says that when we say Ditzach Hadash V'Achav, Rabbi Yehuda's statement, right? And there are many different ideas of why they're paired in certain ways. The threes, the first or the second or the third of each of the groupings, you know, means something. So here the Rav Yah says that the third of each pairing, the third, sixth, and ninth Makkah, Kinim, Shechin, and Choshech, were had some kind of commonality. What was that? He says that when each of them happened, all three of them happened at the same time. So that means that when you had Kinim, you also had Shechin and you also had Choshech, but Kinim was the predominant Makkah. He says the same thing by Shechin. When you had Shechin, you also had Kinim and Choshech, but Shechin was the predominant Makkah. The same thing for Choshech. And he says, and that's why they're grouped 3, 6, 9 in the Titzach, Adash, V'Achav. And that's why if you look at this little grouping of letters, it just shows you, if you write out all three of the letters, Choshech, Shechin, and Kinim, right, then that's going from right to left. Mm-hmm. If you also go top to bottom, Choshech, Shechin, Kinim. And just showing that they're like intertwined, and because they happened at the same time as one another. Okay. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. So we say it towards the end of Magid, right? Amar Rav Gamliel, these are the three main things of the Seder. Whoever didn't say them is not Yotzi. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. In my wife's family, her brother's Hebrew name is Pesach, so we always point to him for Pesach. But, okay. So what Rav Levenstein points out, why is it in this order, right? Which came first? What does the Maror represent?
Slavery,
right? And what is Pesach and Matzah?
The end,
the freedom, the gula. So it should go Maror, Pesach, Matzah, right? Why is it Pesach, Matzah, Maror? So he says that the only way to truly appreciate the slavery that you were in is once you're out of it, right? When Bnei Israel were stuck in the slavery, right? They couldn't listen to Moshe from. They were like zombies, right? They were working. Okay, this is my life. I don't think anything else. It's only once they're free and then they look back and they say, "Wow, that was really hard stuff we were doing there. That was crazy. I can't believe it." That's when they appreciate it, when they're now they have the freedom. So only first, when we say Pesach Matzah, can we then, and we have that freedom now, can we truly appreciate how bad it was, the Maror. And he says, he quotes from, I forget exactly, you can look in this in the scan, but he says the same idea by Shabbos. The Gemara in Beitzah talks about how on Shabbos we get an Neshama Yisayir, an extra soul. Right, but the way that the language says is that it, on Erev Shabbos we say oy that we lost the neshama, and I think maybe it's the Kutzker Rebbe says what do you mean on Erev Shabbos we lose the extra neshama on Motzei Shabbos, so why on Erev Shabbos are we saying oy ve that I lost the extra neshama? So he says it's because it's only once we get to once we get back to Shabbos again and we have the extra neshama, we say, "Whoa! I can't believe the whole week I was lost without my extra neshama. I was like lost without the neshama."
He says, 2020 hindsight.
Right, it's only once you're out of the dreck that you were in that you can appreciate it. Okay, fine.
You think the opposite of what you said earlier about machilim b'kanut.
Yeah. Right. So. Right. Exactly. Okay. Fine. So, okay, closing up here. All right, maybe we'll just skip number 11. We'll just do number 10 and we'll close with this. Okay, so I heard this idea from Moshe Tzvi Weinberg, who's a Rebbe in NYU, is also a friend of mine. So he says, he quoted from the Sefer Minhag Yisrael, Daniel Sperber, isn't it? So he says, well, how many matzahs do you have at your table on Pesach? Three, right? How many do you have?
Three.
Right? Three. So he quotes several people, several sources going back to the 1600s, late 1600s, that there seems to have been some custom to have four matzahs at the table. And the fourth matzah was referred to as the Suffolk matzah. Why? Why Suffolk matzah? So one reason is because they didn't know what it was doing there. Everybody has three matzahs. What do you have a fourth matzah on the table for? But one of the other reasons given is because it's a Suffolk matzah in case one of the other matzahs breaks. So you have, you don't know whether you're going to move. It's a spare, right? Yeah, so you don't know whether you're going to use it or not. So it's a Suffolk matzah. It's a backup. But my friend Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg said, perhaps we can say al pidrush, the night of the Seder is the night of Amunah, So it's right. Chodesh Nisan is the month of Emunah. The night of the Seder is Leil Shimurim. It's really the peak of Emunah, the night of Geula. And Dafka, at this time, we're saying we can bring all the sfeikos to the table. This suffik matzah represents the suffik, the sfeikos in our life, the doubt that we have, questions that we have in Judaism, in our lives, what's happening, Hashem, why is this happening? On the night of Emunah, the night we have faith, we can bring all the questions to the table. And I'll just close with a story he shared from Ramosha Wolfson about the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer, his son one time came to him and said, he asked him a question. It was a very deep philosophical question. It was troubling him. And his father thought for a few minutes. And he said, "I'm sorry, I can't give you an answer." And his son was devastated. "My father's the Gadol Hador. How could he not know the answer to the question?" And he's walking around depressed for days. What am I going to do? And then his father came to him and a few days later and said, "You know that question you had a few days ago? So I have an answer for you." And he started explaining to him. And after a few minutes, it was just so clear. He couldn't even remember what the question was originally, why he even had that question. And his father said to him, "You know, when you first asked me the question, I had an answer for you. But I specifically didn't want to give you the answer because I wanted to teach you it's okay for a Jew to walk around with questions in life. It's okay to have questions. We don't always know why Hashem does certain things, why certain things happen to us, why certain things happen to the Jewish people. And it's okay. We're allowed to have that question." And on the night of the Seder, when we have that Emunah, that's when we can bring the Safek Matzah, we can bring the Sfeikos to the table because everything's so clear. We can ask the questions because it's so clear Hashem's running the world. And even if we have questions, there's a reason for it. So, alright, so I guess we'll stop there. If you want to see the last one inside, you can see the scans inside. I'll post everything on YU Torah.
We'll be a personal list next year.
We'll
be a personal list next year.
Okay, Bezrat Hashem. Alright, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody here to have a mark?